It's our cold start episode. We'll go through a litany of players who started out the season poorly right out of the gate and discuss just what to do with them. Should you play them? Should you bench them? Should you drop them? We'll tell you what we would do. Plus, we'll have our waiver wire pickups, pitcher preview, and Ruvane will catch us up on all of the injuries. Stick around. Beat the Shift is coming up next. And welcome to another episode of the Beat the Shift podcast. I am your host, Ariel Cohen, and with me, as always, is Ruvane Guy. How are you, Ruvane?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic, and our guest for today, you know her. She's been on the show. You know her from Bleed Cubby Blue. You also know her from the Fantasy Feud podcast. Welcome, Sarah Sanchez. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah. Well, what's going on with you? I heard the Cubs were rained out today, and what's this? You're buying $6 tickets that to get you $25. What's going on?
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the greatest things about living five blocks from the ballpark is if it looks like it's going to be a rainout, I just get the seat on StubHub because people are always trying to dump their seats for like $6 and you can get really good seats. And then it turns into a Saturday game or a July game or something like that. In this case, it's a day-night doubleheader. They're going to play at 1:20 on Saturday and then they're going to play again at 6:40. And so got a $6 seat that should be in the sun and the like lower bowl grandstand area. Best deal in town.
Well, wow. That's what you got to do. You got to pick up the cheap rained out tickets that turn into gold. Look at that. Look at you, Sarah.
Very interesting.
Ariel, I once did this when I was not even in town. I saw that there was a rain delay coming and I was like, well, if I'm wrong, I'm out $6. But if I'm right, I have a $6 seat in July.
Sounds like a great $6 bet. Not bad. Good for you. Good for you, Sarah. Yep. Well, we've been off for a couple of weeks here. I've been away. Ruvane's been away. So, you know, we don't, usually don't do a lot of banter and stuff, but, you know, really a lot of stuff going on that we don't want to talk about. A lot of it baseball and sports related as well. But, Ruvane, you were out in Las Vegas this week. Well, what's going on there?
Yeah, we had a family function out in Vegas, and it was interesting because I was talking to a couple of people out there, and they said they're really interested and excited to have the Oakland Athletics move there. They're really interested. They want to have a major league team there, and they'll have a team that they actually root for. So I found that very interesting.
Yeah, the hockey, the Coyotes are moving from Arizona to Utah. You guys hear about that one?
Yeah, I heard
I have not.
Yes, I heard rumors of that.
Surprise,
well, you know, I'm from
sort of.
Utah. I'm from Utah, so... Oh. That's finally a hockey team for Utah. They've had a minor league team there that I've gotten seen before, but that'll be fun.
There you go. Yeah, things happen there. I was out, as you might know, because we've been talking about it on the show, but I went to Chase and Eclipse, and I was supposed to go to Dallas, and that was the plan, because usually Dallas is pretty sunny, right, all the time. But looking at the weather, oh boy, cloudy, rainy, hailstorms. I'm like, why in the world am I spending all this money to go to Dallas to see this thing in the sun and you can't even see it? So on Friday, a couple days before the eclipse, I just changed the trip. Instead of going to Dallas to see the eclipse and then a Rangers game and then at night to see a Dallas Stars game, we switched it to the Northeast. So I drove up all the way in New York, all the way upstate. Actually, we saw the Canadian border even, and we drove all the way through Vermont to go as far north and east to avoid all the clouds. We saw this glorious eclipse, and then later we went to, the next day we went to both Fenway to see the Red Sox, opening day for them, which we'll talk about in a minute, and then we went to see a Boston Bruins game across town, so it was... So for those of you who have never seen an eclipse, it's not just, hey, who's looking at the sun? It is the most spectacular sight you'll ever see in the sky. It looks almost unnatural. It's so bright and shiny, and it turns literally to the dead of night during it. And the 3 minutes is just, you're 3 minutes in awe of it. And, you know, it's silly. Why are you chasing this thing for 3 minutes? But, you know, life is fleeting, and there's just moments. And you know, it felt like an adventure. You know, we were supposed to be in Dallas. Now we're chasing it up in the Northeast. We actually were going to stop in Plattsburgh, New York. We're like, no, let's go to Vermont. It was an adventure. I don't really get too many of these adventures, and for a fleeting moment. So I really thought it was spectacular. And if just to see a partial, I was telling my kid the other day, the difference between a 9% eclipse and a 99% eclipse is more, is not as much as the difference between 99 and 100. Like, seeing that total eclipse makes all the difference. But anyways, we did go to opening day at Fenway, and if you've seen that, I know, Sarah, we're talking, you saw that. It was absolutely an amazing, amazing tribute to the 2004 team and to Tim Wakefield, who passed away. And they didn't announce anybody on the team, like, welcome this guy, welcome Ortiz, welcome Johnny Dim. They just all walked slowly in from the outfield, all together with Wakefield's kids, just hugging each other, everyone walking in unison, and they played about a nine-minute video of the whole season to the tune of American Bye Bye American Pie. It was just absolutely incredible.
I was watching it on TV. The Red Sox are my AL team, as y'all know, and I was just sobbing on my couch. The passing of Tim Wakefield was so sad. The fact that his wife passed away shortly thereafter, also from cancer, leaving those two awesome kiddos behind. Kevin Millar was in the booth early in the game, and he was talking about how every single guy on the field was like, we're your uncles, we've got you for whatever you need, to those kids, and that made me cry again. I don't think you need to be a Red Sox fan for that one to get to you. It was a pretty special ceremony. If you haven't watched it yet, take a look. We were actually talking about it. It was my Lovett for Fantasy Feud that week, and I deliberately did not give any spoilers because Shelley is also a Red Sox fan and hadn't seen it yet, so I couldn't spoil that for her.
And the funny thing also is that to catch the ceremonial first pitch from Wakefield's kids, and they said, and very good friend of Tim Wakefield, Jason Varitek. But as some of you might know, Wakefield didn't actually throw to Varitek. They had Doug Mirabelli. Yeah, they had Doug Mirabelli catch him because Varitek couldn't. And I remember I can't remember which year, but Mirabelli wasn't on the team, and Varitek tried to catch him, and he just couldn't. And they had to get Mirabelli on the team. Do you remember that?
Because of that knuckleball. No one can catch knuckleball. All knuckleballers usually have their own personal catcher, and he had Doug Mirabelli, just like R.A. Dickey had Josh Tolley. I think it was Darno. He never caught I don't think it was Darno, whoever it was Ramon Castro at the time for the Mets. He couldn't catch a knuckleball either, but Josh Tolley learned how to do it, and wherever Josh Tolley went, he was prized catcher as the one who can catch a knuckleballer. So if his team had a knuckleballer, he got an automatic job.
That's right. And they actually, it wasn't Darno. That's how the Mets got Darno. They traded Dickey
right.
for Darno and Noah Syndergaard.
I think it was Ramon Castro, I think, the catcher at the time.
Could be.
I was just going to say, did either of you ever see the documentary about the knuckleball? I think it's just called Knuckleball. It was on Netflix for a while. I don't know if it still is, but that is great stuff. They have all these conversations with old knuckleballers and talking about how the pitch works. If you've never seen a classic knuckleballer in person on a day where their pitch is working, you really have to. It's not quite total eclipse of the sun level, but it is truly something to behold, the way that ball does unpredictable things.
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, to be able to somewhat control it and know where it's going a little bit is something, but it just fools batters. And, you know, that's probably why, was it Aaron Boone who hit that homer off of Wakefield? Because Boone was sort of off then. He was not a fantastic player. His brother, Brett Boone, was better, but he was a little bit off. And when you're a little bit off and you're facing a knuckleballer, maybe you make contact. And, That's how he hit that home run to send the Yankees to the World Series that year, I believe.
And I think that there's one current knuckleballer in majors right now. I think Matt Waldron is a knuckleballer for the Padres. So he's a guy, I haven't watched his starts. I don't know if he has his own personal catcher, but that's a curious thing also.
Yeah, no, good stuff. Do want to just mention that, man, this softball is going so well this season. This is my best season to date. I can't believe it. We're 4-0. Our run differential in games, 52-3. That's three runs given up in four games. 0.41 ERA, 0.86 whip, 10 Ks in 22 innings in softball. Oh, man. And our Wednesday league starts May 1st. So looking forward to that. Actually had Frank Stamfel, CBS podcast. He came and he played this past week. So got to see him, and he got to see our team firsthand. So shout out to Frank for coming. And last item is Ruvane, your kid and my kid, same baseball league, and apparently there is a game scheduled in a couple of weeks that I think we'll both attend.
Yes, I think our sons are playing against each other in a game, which is going to be very interesting because, you know, I've only gotten to go to one game so far, and my son really hasn't played that much, but it's definitely interesting to see, you know, to see your kid playing on the team against my kid. It'll be very interesting.
Yeah, well, my kid is the first baseman. He bats second, although he is going to pitch. He's a lefty submariner. Throws about 70 miles an hour now, so...
Well, my son's a pitcher and outfielder also. He's mainly, I guess, a pitcher. He hasn't gotten to a game yet because he's a freshman. So, you know, we'll see about that. But, you know, hope for good things.
All right. So we'll see you there. All right. Let's get on to fantasy baseball here. And we've got a lot to cover. And we're going to talk about some slow starts, what to do with them and whatnot. But before that, I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the pitcher injuries. And you know, I was looking at the list of top velocities thrown in 2023, and you got names Sandy Alcantara, Spencer Strider, Gerrit Cole, Kodai Senga, Framber Valdez. All of these pitchers hurt right now. So, Ruvane, going to go to you on this first one. You know, this has to be related to velocity, obviously, and do you think that Major League Baseball really has a problem on its hand?
I think baseball does have a problem on its hands, and I think they're always trying to tweak it a little bit. I read an article earlier today that the baseball for this year has changed, and home runs are already down for this year. So if the baseball keeps changing on the pitchers, and the pitchers are still trying to throw at the high velocity that they're supposed to, and they're trained to go throw as hard as possible, as often as possible, which is not the way that, you know, people were taught to pitch and play baseball even 10, 15, 20 years ago, it's a strain on an arm and an elbow that is just unbelievable. It's an unnatural thing to throw a baseball 100 miles an hour. And I said this when DeGrom got hurt. It's unnatural to throw a baseball 100 miles an hour 100 times in one day. It just doesn't make any sense to do that. And if you add on to the fact all the rule changes, less of the tacky stuff and everything like that, I think it was Justin Verlander who mentioned all these things. It's not just one thing. Yes, MLB has a problem, but it's everything combined. And I think there's no one solution for this. I heard some people say that, you know what, maybe if you give an incentive for pitchers to throw 5-6 innings, then maybe you'll have pitchers throw at a lower velocity just because they'll want to pitch more innings. But besides that, I don't see any real way to fix the problem because there's just so many things contributing to it.
Yeah, so Sarah, you know, I'm listening to the Met game the other day, and Jose Quintana is pitching for them, and he was saying, Quintana, that, you know, 20 years ago he came up, you know, he's thrown 91, he still throws 91, and he's lasted all this time with a major league job. But if he would be coming up today in today's era throwing 91, who the hell are you? That he would never get noticed. He probably wouldn't make the major leagues because no one would ever notice him and give him a chance. And the pitchers who, you know, take the extra step and bulk up and load up and go 96, 97, whoa, they're making it, but they're getting hurt. There might be elite, but, you know, they're out for a whole year, every couple of years. You know, what's your take on this? Is this good for baseball? Is this just going to exacerbate the issue, just going to get worse?
Oh, it is absolutely terrible for baseball if a fundamental structure of the game is causing their best players to be injured frequently. I do think that Ruvane hit on something that I don't think we talk about enough, though, which is that there are so many variables that impact pitcher health. And it's not just that they're throwing faster. Like, there was the sticky stuff rule enforcement, which changed the way a lot of the pitchers delivered the ball and how hard they had to grip the ball or what they needed to do in order to get the spin that they were previously getting on it. You know, in that Verlander interview, one of the things he also talks about is that during the course of his career, he had to change the way he pitched because he used to be able to pitch to contact on some things and it would just be a loud fly ball out. And then the ball became more home run friendly all of a sudden, and he had to strike guys out more if he was going to hope to persist. We all remember when Justin Verlander kind of looked like he was having a down year towards the start of 2017 before he was traded to the Astros. There is a myriad of things going on that are impacting pitcher health. And the last one that I just don't want to leave out at all, because I think this is a really long-term problem. I was listening to Rates and Barrels the other day and the 3-0 show version, and Bridgeroli had a really great take on youth baseball and the incentive structures for kids to play all year long now. My brother did not play baseball all year long. He would play baseball, then he'd take a break, he'd do some wrestling, he would play basketball, he would come back to baseball. He was not trying to throw 90 miles an hour at 16 years old all season long. There were not these travel ball showcases. There were not scouts coming to Price, Utah to look at 14 and 15 year olds. That is a fundamental difference in the way developing arms are being impacted by the incentive structure in the sport. And if you want to make sure these guys stay healthy, you probably need to get them to the major leagues without a Tommy John surgery at 17.
Yes, and about that whole thing with Tommy John surgery, I saw an article that Dr. James Andrews said that the UCL for an elbow, for the pitcher's elbow, doesn't fully mature until the age of 26. So if you have pitchers who are throwing over 100 miles an hour with a not completely developed UCL, there's a greater chance that it's going to tear. But there is some positive news, though. People think that Tommy John surgeries are on the rise right now. This is actually a lower rate than, let's say, in 2021. 2021 and 2014 was actually when it started, were the two peaks when there were two spikes of much more Tommy John surgeries than any other season. It's been down a little bit more, which is better, but, you know, you're getting other issues. You're not getting more shoulder issues. You're getting thoracic outlet syndrome issues, which weren't a thing before this. They just didn't exist in baseball until, I'd say, about 10 years ago, when I think one of the major pitchers who first got the thoracic outlet syndrome was Matt Harvey and Steven Strasburg. And what were their problems? They were on quote-unquote pitch counts. Why were they on pitch counts? Because they were throwing so hard. So baseball, you know, the teams tried to protect the pitchers, but even after protecting them, they still got hurt. So there still is an underlying problem. And, you know, unless the commissioner has an idea how to fix it, I think all of baseball suffers because we want these pitchers on the mound. It's good for baseball to see the best pitchers against the best hitters. If we don't see that, you know, we're just missing out.
But it can't be a pitch count thing because pitchers are pitching less innings these days, right? They're not going five or they're going just five. You know, they're not ending up with 230 innings total. They're ending up with 170. So it can't be a pitch count compared to previous years. It's got to be either a velocity thing or you can add in the other things. People are also saying the pitch clock has something to do with it because you're throwing more at your max velocity and you don't have enough max effort. You don't have enough time to recuperate, recover. So it's hard to say what it is, but I don't think it's the pitch count. I mean, the Harvey was limited for the year after his Tommy John surgery, but it's definitely not an innings thing, right?
Well, yes, it is an innings thing because it doesn't matter how many innings. If they're throwing the same velocity for four innings, let's say you're throwing 100 miles an hour for four innings. Like when we went to a Jacob deGrom start, he'd throw 100 miles an hour almost every single pitch. He'd throw, his sliders were 98, and he keeps going and going and going for four or five innings. And, you know, he was made fun of on the radio waves here in New York that he can't go past the fifth or sixth inning. The Mets were trying to protect him because they were pushing him to the limit every single time. So it's has nothing, you can put an innings limit on it. I think baseball is trying to do that to protect the pitchers. That's why starters don't go so far. But the fact that they're going at full velocity every single time, constantly, and with now 15 seconds, 20 seconds to recover, if you have a rubber band and you keep stretching, and just like the UCL, it keeps stretching and stretching it, you're not giving it any time to rest, you're going to have a problem.
All right, so we need to talk about how it affects our fantasy game. But before then, time for the Injury Guru's Trivia of the Week.
So we're talking about injuries and pitchers and how we should, you know, acclimate to this new environment of pitcher injuries and everything like that. We are only 3 weeks into the season, but my trivia question for this week is, how many of the top 50 ADP starting pitchers, according to the NFBC during draft season, have already spent time on the IL? Of the top 50. And bonus points if you can name a few of them.
Well, I can definitely name a few of them, but I'm not sure I know the exact number. Top 50, I am going to say
starting
28,
pitchers only.
28.
Top 50 overall ADP, though.
Overall ADP.
All right. Well, Spencer Strider, obviously, but in terms of number, I'll say 6.
13. Strider, Framber Valdez, Bobby Miller, Justin Steele, Garrett Cole, Yuri Perez is on the border there, Sonny Gray was on the border there, Shane Bieber, Kodai Senga. I mean, all these guys, I can just keep going on and on. with the fact that all these starting pitchers are getting hurt so early on in the season, and usually the 100-day mark from when you start spring training and starting everything like that is when pitchers get injured. So my question to you, Sarah, is this. Is there a way we should be altering our fantasy strategy going into draft season or during the season because of all these injuries?
Yeah, I think there is. And I actually think that the real-life Chicago Cubs are doing a version of this. I've never heard them talk about it in connection with injuries, but the more I look at the way the pitchers they prioritize and who they've signed in recent years, the more I wonder if this was also to hedge injury to some extent. They have a lot of guys who pitch to contact, and they go after a lot of guys who pitch to contact. Marcus Stroman, you've got Jameson Taillon, Kyle Hendricks, of course, who we might talk about later as one of the guys who may be done, but for a long time it worked. They develop a lot of guys who throw 93-94, and they don't have these like ridiculous fancy spin rates, but they get good results by doing things with tunneling and with seam shifted wake and with other ways that are a little bit less dominant in terms of what the stuff is on the individual pitch. You look at a guy like Javier Saad, or you look at a guy like Justin Steele, who incidentally is not an elbow injury or a shoulder
injury.
That's
just random.
A hamstring, and I do think that that's an important differentiation here. Those are injuries that are going to occur, but they're like, there's a lesser likelihood of it if you're training guys who are throwing at 95% of their max and they can get guys out on guile as opposed to on stuff. And so in terms of fantasy strategy, I mean, you probably want to pick up an Edward Cabrera in the late rounds. You might also want to pick up a Jose Quintana. And I did in quite a few drafts with my later round picks, Jose Quintana, Martin Perez. Those were guys I thought could realistically give me 5+ innings, would be in line for wins, would have good ratios. They weren't going to give me strikeouts, but it's almost like a punt strikeout strategy.
Yeah, I mean, we're always told, well, look at the velocity. Oh, you know, that guy's throwing faster. That looks interesting. It's almost, I'm not going to say the opposite, but it's almost a cautionary tale. Would you say that now?
I think it is. And I mean, I'm not saying that you should punt strikeouts entirely. I have a lot of guys. I mean, I took Spencer Strider with the second overall pick in Tout Wars and ruining that a little bit now. It is what it is. It was a perfectly defensible pick at the time by process. I would do it again, but not knowing the injury, obviously. But, you know, with the information I had, I would do it again. But I think you need a mix. I think you need a mix of a Strider and a Steele. You need guys who are throwing, who are durable, like a Quintana, in addition to guys who have ridiculous strikeout stuff, like an Edward Cabrera. And I think that you kind of want to balance that a little bit more. And if all you did was go for really high velocity upside arms, you could find yourself in a world of hurt on the injury front.
You know, if you're taking pitchers in the early rounds, like we were on this podcast, you know, Logan Webb, you know, just low risk, you know, and he throws 92, 93 or so. Maybe in the early rounds, I know he's not a big strike. They're not big strikeout pitchers. You know, they're not terrible. But, you know, take a guy like that, somebody who's throwing, you know, maximum 94 or so. Obviously, you're not going to take a $10 pitcher in a $20 pitcher slot. But take one of that level who is throwing there just to hedge risk. And if you want to take some upside arms later, okay. If you have to cut a $3, $7 pitcher, different than having, oh my goodness, Spencer Strider, oh my goodness, Framber Valdez is hurt, oh my goodness, Gerrit Cole is hurt, right? It's a way to do that. You know, I want to throw out there that is it a worthwhile I think I was listening to Jeff Erickson talk about the pocket aces strategy, but I mean, is it worthwhile taking two aces, being that, well, you know, if one of them gets hurt, you get the other, and you just throw a little bit more into pitching versus hitting? Is that a viable strategy, or is the strategy maybe take an ace who, you know, throws a little bit softer, and then just take a bunch of 10, you know, $8 to $14 starters, quantity over quality, but make it lower? Is that the right strategy?
It could be. I mean, I like the idea of pocket aces hedging risk a little bit, like you could lose one of your aces but still have one. But I also think some of this is just unpredictable, right? As Ruvane mentioned, and I think about that rubber band analogy a lot, particularly with UCL, what we are asking pitchers to do, even the pitchers who throw 92 miles an hour or 93 or 94, is a violent act that they repeat over and over and over again. There is injury risk there no matter what. So I think that having maybe a couple of guys who are different rather than a couple of guys who are the same as your SP1 and SP2, and then, like you said, loading up on some values at the end of drafts who, again, mix it up. Guys who are high strikeout guys, but also guys who are high innings guys. It doesn't all have to be strikeouts all of the time.
And that's true because of the fact that if you have two guys who throw like 100 miles an hour and you're saying, you know what, I'm going to get two because I think one of them is going to get hurt. You shouldn't be drafting like that. You shouldn't be saying, you know what, I'm going to draft this guy, but I think he may get hurt. It's like saying, I'm going to draft Adalberto Mondesi this year, but I think he'll get hurt. I'm going to draft Byron Buxton this year, even though I know he'll get hurt, or Chris Bryant or someone like that. You don't want to do that. You want to have a solid team to start when you're putting your team together. And if you take two top spots and you're putting them for top pitchers who throw 100 miles an hour and you're putting that risk in there, I mean, how could pocket aces work in this day and age? I don't think it's going to work.
Yeah, you know, when I do my pricing, you know, I always have a risk adjustment for players who are, quote, risky, right? And, you know, a player is projected at $27, but, you know, he's a little bit more risky. He might have a risk adjustment of -3 and they may only spend 24 on him. Maybe the risk adjustment has to be more tied at the top of the draft to velocity, at least not all velocity, but extreme velocity. Pitcher who's throwing 98 miles an hour, maybe we just have to increase that risk adjustment. And you can draft him, but you got to really draft him well under his price. And it might mean that you don't draft the guy. You know, that type of thing. I'm really considering doing that for next year because it's happening pretty often, and it's not fully correlated, but it's correlating very heavily with the extreme velocity pitchers at the top of drafts. As Ruben just showed, 13 pitchers on the IL, that's not insignificant, and it's really hard to do. My other question is, does this mean that we need to throw more money or less money into pitching? So if you're at an auction, you know, the old 70-30 has gone in the NFBC to more like 60-40 in terms of hitters versus pitchers. The fact that pitchers are getting more injured or there's more uncertainty, especially at the top, does that mean that we should be spending more money in pitching to shore it up or less money because it's so uncertain? Sarah?
I'm not sure. I can see arguments for either one of those strategies. I will say, and I would love to see someone do an analysis of this because my gut instinct of looking at the injury reports and looking at Derek Rhodes' data over at Baseball Prospectus is that hitters get injured with less frequency and they get injured less predictably than pitchers do, in which case I almost want to double down on hitters more. But I also think that this is room dependent, because if you're in a room where everyone is doubling down on hitters, you can't get an advantage that way because everybody would be investing less on pitching and the price for hitting would go up in a correlated way. So I think some of this is room dependent on your auction. And I think there is still an advantage to be had in investing in starting pitching, but it might be bumping up, like you said, the Logan Webbs of the world, bumping up the guys who look a little bit safer just in terms of their general stuff and arsenal, and sitting out on some of the flashier arms. I mean, I have Tarek Skubal as my SP1 in Glarf this year, and the velocity is like ridiculous, and he looks unhittable. And also, I am totally nervous that he is going to break at any given moment.
Yeah, it's not a guarantee that they're going to break, but, you know, again, if you're noticing that a very high percentage of a certain cohort gets injured, that doesn't mean that everybody will get injured. It just means that there's a much increased risk. You might want to try to alter strategy to play less in that region and more in the safer region. Like, I'm almost thinking spend a little bit more to secure a Logan Webb, sit out the pitching, and then go $10, $10, $10, $10, and getting a bunch of number five starters. You know, just sit that out. You'll have less attrition, right? Maybe you'll do more quanti, so you'll avoid the waiver wire more, but you'll have a lot less risk. Again, pitchers do get hurt at every level, but I think it's a little bit on the type of pitchers you take and their makeup, but it's also on where you want to play as well to avoid risk.
And Sarah, what you said was exactly right. With that information you said is exactly right. The last couple of years, pitchers make up about 55-57% of the injured players during the course of the season. And their injuries are actually more predictable because you can tell, you know, which guys are going to get, or you have a better idea who's going to get hurt. But you never know what hitters, a lot of their injuries are broken bones, you know, a pulled hamstring or something like that. That you can't really predict. But pitchers who are doing the same thing over and over again, if you were there and out in Arizona, and one of the things that I said coming into this year was I thought that Spencer Strider was a high risk to get hurt just because of his age, how many innings
he's
thrown.
Well, you nailed that, Ruben.
And his velocity. Unfortunately, I was correct about it. I didn't want to be correct about it, but just if you look at past case studies of how these pitchers went, it was almost inevitable that he was going to get hurt.
I want to talk about players with cold starts, you know, and we'll talk about specific players, but also in general, what to do with them. You know, if you've got a pitcher, if you've got a top pitcher, you know, one of your ace or number two pitchers, and they've got, start the year out, three bad starts in a row, are you sitting him? You're not dropping him. Are you sitting him? What if he has five bad starts in a row, you know, five earned runs or more left in five innings? What's your tipping point, Sarah, for benching pitchers who are, you know, turn out bad? Is it, you know, for top pitchers, is it five bad starts? For medium pitchers, is it three bad starts? Maybe it's two bad starts for a low-level pitcher. Like, what's your general way on how you limit, you know, the active players for players who are just underperforming?
Well, let's start with pitchers. With pitchers in particular, I really think it depends on what you have on your bench that you can pop in there, right? So, I don't know, a guy who started pretty slow this year, Kevin Gausman, he's had three starts that have been pretty iffy, two that have been very bad. There's been some velocity concerns, those types of things. He's a guy that if I had the opportunity to sit him against, say, the New York Yankees, I might do that. I might also miss out on a rebound start that he's having against those New York Yankees. I think you have to go look at the shape of why the starts are bad, because there is a bad start that is a pitcher getting babbled to death, not giving up a ton of hard contact. The defenders just aren't where they're supposed to be. And that can happen a game or two in a row. That's not totally out of the realm of possibility. But then there are bad starts that are more structural. You know, I mentioned, and obviously not a guy who was drafted very highly, if at all, in most 12 and 15 team leagues, but does get picked up as a streamer now and again and has been predictably a pretty good ratios guy for the last few years. Kyle Hendricks does not look like he has it this year at all. And you can see it pretty easily in the hard hit data. You can see it in terms of the type of contact he's giving up. Every time he gets an opportunity to go third time through the order, he gets absolutely lit up. That's probably makes him a non-starter in terms of getting wins at all. And I'm not sure what the Cubs can do about that right now, given their injury situation, but I'm sure that I, as a fantasy manager, can stream someone else. That's an easy decision because that's a guy that you either picked up off the waiver wire for a dollar for a two-start week, and you can try to replace him with another guy that you picked up off the waiver wire for a dollar for a two-start week. It's a much more difficult decision when that guy is like Alek Manoah with what happened with him last year. And in retrospect, it kind of looks like perhaps the clock, perhaps some other things happened that structurally changed Manoah's ability to get guys out. But I totally understand why people didn't make the decision to bench him until May. And by then it was just too late. Your ratios were trash.
Yeah, so Ruben, you know, took a guy like Manoah, or, you know, you mentioned Gausman, and you can throw Bassett in. Maybe the Blue Jays are, you know, taking longer to ramp up pitchers, and they're really playing for later on. Because, you know, Bassett did the same thing last year where he stunk the first two starts and then it was great, and that's what he did this year as well. Gausman did a similar thing. He had a couple of clunkers to start the year, and he was phenomenal. So it might be a team philosophy with them. But, you know, Ruben, what are you seeing in terms of, can you tell when a pitcher is just hurt or doesn't have it versus cold and will rebound? Alek Manoah obviously didn't work. You know, sometimes you see, well, that was a bad start. Suddenly, you know, Tristan McKenzie, bad start. Boom, injured. You know, he's hurt. What should we be looking for to detect injury versus just cold or bad starts?
Well, first of all, for Kevin Gausman, he had a shoulder issue at the end of spring training, and they were thinking about starting him on the IL. And he had his last spring training start. He did really well. They said, you know what? You're good to go. So maybe he wasn't good to go. Maybe there's certain organizations, they try to push their stars a little bit more. The Blue Jays know they're in a tough division. They wanted to get as many stars out of Kevin Gausman as they possibly can.
Well, they figure that Gausman, you know, at whatever percentage of his skill, probably better than any other option they can throw. So you might as well go with it and rehab while in the majors. You know?
Well, after three starts right now, do you think they had a better option out there? You don't know. They may have. I mean, you never know what's going to happen. I mean, you see these random starters come up for the Orioles, where Tyler Wells went down, Suarez came in. You had no one, very few people knew who he was, and all of a sudden he came in to fill in and he did well. So why couldn't the Blue Jays do the same thing and protect their arm? This is something that some organizations do better than others. The Braves, they're very good at protecting their starters. They know what they're doing. They don't necessarily listen to the pitchers. They see the data themselves, and that's one thing to do, because managers and the training staff can look at the pitchers, can see exactly what's going on, and they have their own agenda. But, you know, some organizations, they'll say, you know what, we're going to be a little bit safer. But there's some things to look for. You can look for, you know, change in velocity. You can see how wild they are. You can look for, you know, because Alek Manoah last year was extremely wild and he just couldn't find it. That's what it was. But a guy like you mentioned, Chris Bassitt, he's a guy who, you know, he's a slow starter. Some pitchers are just slow starters. Some pitchers, they need a couple of starts just to get under the belt so they can get some innings going and they can get, you know, just get going. But if you see that all of a sudden they're walking a lot of people, or you see maybe you get a look at, maybe there's a way you can see their mechanics are off a little. This is something that Nick Pollock is probably good at. You can see that their mechanics are off a little bit. And if you see a little thing is off, that can throw off their whole rotation, that whole delivery. It could throw off their velocity. It could throw off everything. And pitchers are, you know, and I think Yogi Berra said baseball is 90% physical and 30% mental or something like that. So the fact pitchers are different creatures when it comes to pitching as opposed to hitters. Pitchers, they have to have a set schedule. If they don't have a set schedule, they get thrown off. Some pitchers have to go on 5 days rest, some go on 6 days rest, and some are better, vice versa. So if you screw one little thing up, either, and it can be the change of the ball also, I mentioned that before, you change one little thing, it can throw everything off, and sometimes it takes 3, 4, even 5 weeks or like 5 or 6 starts to actually see it. I think it's still a little bit too soon to know for sure, unless someone's really being bombed. But I think it's still too soon to say for a lot of the pitchers.
Sarah, what do you look at in terms of player statistics and peripheral, you know, underlying stats in terms of, you know, hey, is this cold start legit or is this cold start just unlucky?
I look at a handful of things. I look at pitch velocity, and I look at pitch velocity for all of their pitches, not just their fastball, to see if there's like a structural change in terms of, you know, if the fastball velocity dips, but the other velocities are similar, that actually can hurt them. It might mean that players are better at timing up their off-speed stuff or timing up their breaking stuff, that they can see it a little bit differently. I actually like to go to Brooks Baseball, some of the old school stuff, and look at like things like release point, just to see if there's something different out of the hand that maybe batters are reacting to. I like to see what's going on in terms of how they are throwing things. So like literally, are they throwing a pitch in a different position than they used to? Are they trying out something new that maybe is not working out? Are they trying to throw their fastballs higher in the zone or lower in the zone? Does it look like they're testing a new thing? I think the scariest thing is when you look at this and you see something like a solid velocity dip, which generally to me indicates a structural change and or an injury that is making it harder for them to do what they used to do. And when you see something like a new strategy with their pitch mix that is not producing results, because that either indicates to me that they're going to keep trying out this new thing until it doesn't work anymore, or they're trying out something new for some other reason. Either they thought the other thing wasn't working and they're not getting the results that they want to. So those are a handful of the things that I look at: release point, velocity, and pitch mix.
Yeah, and you can look at some of the Fangraph stats. You look at, you know, strand rate, BABIP. You can see whether they're really unlucky, they're getting pounded, and it's not really them, or whether it's legit. You can look at strikeout rate, walk rate, see if that's just not, you know, not just mashing up. Look at the difference between their Sierra or FIP or XFIP and their ERA to see whether, you know, some of those ERA estimators are in line with their true ERA, and you can spot that stuff. And of course, if you see a big difference, then you can dive deeper, I think, into some of the stuff that Sarah is talking about. You know, Sarah, how do you decide when to drop a pitcher? Obviously, if you've paid $20, $30 for a pitcher, it's going to take a long time before you drop him. But how do you know? Is it looking at the opportunity cost of, hey, you know, this guy on the waiver wire, is he going to just maybe do better than him, better than who I have. And I've got that hot guy on the waivers. I've got my cold guy there. Swap. It's low enough cost. Okay. How do you decide when to drop somebody?
It's a really tough decision this time of year. So it very much depends on why I drafted that particular pitcher. Obviously, if a guy goes out with a season-ending injury, like as soon as you know it's a season-ending injury, they're gone. But I held on to Strider until the second I knew that that UCL was being surgically repaired and he would not pitch this season, because he is that type of pitcher. Like, even if I could hold him on an IL spot for a few months and get a couple of months later, I felt like that was worth holding on to him in that IL spot. I think that the harder questions are things like, what do you do with a pitcher who you picked up in the middle rounds, who you were kind of speculating on, right? Like, you know, Ryan Pepiot didn't have a really good first start. I believe in Ryan Pepiot. I drafted him for reasons. I thought that the trade, like when the Rays trade for a guy, I'm interested in a guy. I benched him for his next start. That wound up being an absolute gem against Colorado in Colorado.
Yeah,
definitely feel pretty bad about benching him for that start, but also feel good about, you know, starting him again now. I think that the easier questions are the guys that you picked up late, right? Like, at least for me, anybody that I picked up after round 17 or so, I'm kind of already thinking of them as a streamer, as somebody that I'm going to sort of cycle through on the waiver wire. And so it's not that hard of a decision for me if you used your last pick on a Kyle Hendricks to replace Kyle Hendricks with somebody else off the waiver wire. But it's a much more difficult decision when that's an Alek Manoah. And I did not have Alek Manoah in a lot of places last year, not for want of trying. He was a pitcher that I was super into last season. I think I probably would have had him on my bench through Memorial Day. And that would have been a mistake. But Memorial Day is generally when I make my decisions of cut and run or not.
Well, that's good advice. And the general thing we say on the show here is that if you're going to drop him and somebody for the league is going to pick him up right away, it's probably not a good idea to drop him. You know, you have to gauge what the marketing is. If somebody's not going to pick him up next week, well, you could drop him, right? It's minus there'll be a fab cost to re-picking him up. But aside from that, you know, you'll be able to get him. Okay, you can do it. If you're not going to be able to get him back, you might want to think twice.
Well, the question is also, who are you going to replace him with? Are you going to take a two-star pitcher that you like one start, you don't like the second start, and you say, you know what the heck, let's try it? Are you going to pick a pitcher that you're just going to pick, start streaming, you know, you just keep streaming starters? Or are you going to pick up a middle reliever that's going to maybe, you know, as long as they don't blow up, like a Yennier Cano or something like that, as long as they don't blow up, you know, sometimes dropping that pitcher, even though it's so hard to, and you did all the prep and you want to keep this person, but sometimes you just have to just let it go.
It's also team context dependent. You know, am I badly struggling? Do I have a lot of injured players? Do I need to make up ground? So there's obviously a lot of factors. We're just giving you some general ideas and hopefully some pointed advice so you can make your better decision. Let's talk about a couple of players, a couple of pitchers first, who have started out pretty cold, and I guess we can just go around the room and what we would do with them and in what context. A guy like, I drafted Griffin Canning in a bunch of spots. To me, I'm just dropping everywhere. Anybody think differently about Griffin Canning?
No, that's no. A perfectly defensible decision.
Yeah. I'll try to stream somebody else or throw a middle reliever instead. How about a guy like Josiah Gray?
Well, I think Josiah Gray is actually injured at the moment. He was somebody I looked at for this, and I don't remember. I think there's an elbow injury there, so I'm definitely dropping him now. But prior to the elbow injury, I certainly, that would have been a mystifying one. That's one that I would have been like, I don't know. He's one of the two pitchers in that Nationals rotation that I think really has a spot. He's a high level prospect. Kind of want to write it out for at least a couple of weeks. Might be a guy that I put on my bench instead of starting right away. Like he would move to a bench spot, assuming I had somebody better to put in that pitching spot. And at that point, given what he had done, I probably would consider like a Matt Strom or somebody who is a middle reliever that I think can vulture a win or vulture a save into that spot ahead of Josiah Gray. But I think I would have held him on my bench rather than cutting him before the injury. With the injury, I'm just out.
You know, it's so funny. I'm looking at the worst pitchers in terms of, you know, dollar value to date. And the worst pitcher projected wise, according to ATC this year, was Kyle Freeland. And lo and behold, after just a couple of weeks, he is the absolutely most negative pitcher on there. You, and if you're in a roto league, stay far away from Kyle Freeland as you can. So funny. What about a guy like Louis Varland, who a lot of people had promise? He might be a guy that I'm going to drop in maybe 10, 12 team leagues, but in 15 team leagues, maybe not. Just bench for now. Mono leagues, you're holding still. What are you doing with Louis Varland?
I have a lot of Louis Varland, and he's on my bench right now in every 15 team league I have, and he's about to get dropped in most 12s.
Okay, so you agree.
Well, what about a guy, a teammate of his, Bailey Ober? Bailey Ober has been horrible. The ERA, you know, his whip is 1.45. His ERA is 6.57. He's got his lowest K rate in his career. It's down to 8. Even though the BAP is high, his strand rate is extremely low. I mean, he's up almost a half a walk per 9 innings from last year, even though his velocity is
well,
up.
But is that,
I mean,
one
Bailey
start?
Bailey Ober, that's...
Is that one
that's
start?
Three starts.
Well,
starts.
But the first start, he gave up 8 runs in 1 inning. Since then, 5 innings, 1 run, 3 hits, 6 innings, 0 runs, 3 hits. So that might just be, you know, one bad start and having, you know, you're looking at just the overall statistics and not seeing that, oh, obviously, you know, if you played him, you had to suck up that bad outing. But from now on, he should be better.
He should be, but he's also a guy that up until last year was just a waiver wire guy. And that's one of the things you should see. If they were just waiver wire guys, like Kyle Gibson, do you want to keep rostering Kyle Gibson, or is he just a waiver wire guy? Miles Michaelis, I mean, these guys, they kill your ERA and whip, and by the time you decide to take them out of your lineup or to drop them, it's already too late.
So for Ober's case, I'm playing him in 15-team leagues still. In 12-team leagues, I'm probably playing matchup play or so. I'm definitely not dropping him in 10-team leagues. Okay, you know, you can bench him. I'm still holding, though, Ober. I'm not dropping Ober anywhere, although maybe I'm sitting him in shallow leagues, but I'm totally confident with Ober. You know, you mentioned Michaelis and the other guy, Gibson. Those guys are streaming options only, or if you're in a head-to-head league that really, you know, you're just going for the innings, those are actually good options. I actually have both of them in Tout Wars, and that's fine. They'll get me 2 points instead of 30 points an outing, but if that's who I have, that's who I have. Sarah, you disagree with anything?
I am not a big Ober person. I didn't draft him anywhere because I kind of didn't believe in it, and I feel vindicated by that. I kind of want to make our jobs a little bit harder here, though, so I'm going to throw out another name, and that is Max Fried. The strikeouts are just not there. He has a couple of starts that are horrendously bad so far. The only good start that Max Fried has had was against a Marlins team that may be historically bad. That was 6 1/3, 4 hits, 1 run. It was earned. Only struck out 4 with 1 walk. His most recent start was against a Houston Astros team that has also struggled tremendously. That was 5 innings pitched, 7 hits, 3 runs. They were all earned. 4 walks to 2 strikeouts. You probably drafted Max Fried to be your ace or maybe an SP2 if you took a really early starting pitcher and you were kind of trying to do something like a quasi-pocket aces strategy. And I don't feel comfortable starting Max Fried right now.
Well, you know, in deeper leagues, I'm still starting him. Maybe in shallow leagues, I'm sitting him against a tough opponent. But he does have a 375 BABIP. He's got only a 60% strand rate. His velocity is right there as usual. I am concerned about the strikeouts and walks, though. That seems totally out of whack. Maybe that'll stabilize a little bit. I'm cautious with him. I don't think you can drop him in any format yet. But in shallower leagues, I'm probably going to sit him in tough starts at the moment.
But remember, he plays for the Braves, so he gives you, even if he gives up 3, 4, 5 runs in 5 innings, they still have a chance for a win. And to get those wins, it's because with that Braves bullpen, if he leaves the game and the game is, and it's like a 5-4 game, there's a chance that the Braves will hold on to that lead. So, you know, it's like picking up a waiver wire guy and just sticking him in there. I know you didn't pay for it, like pay for Max Fried like a waiver wire guy, but he could still get you wins, and wins are so hard to get. He's still on a good team. I think you still have to play him, even just play him no matter what. You invested in him. I think you have to stick with him, and if he's your ace, he's your live or die
guy. So would you rather go with Jared Jones now against the Rockies or Max Fried against the Texas Rangers right now?
I would absolutely put Jared Jones in my lineup and put Max on my bench.
Right, right. So I think it is context dependent.
Yes, yes.
You know, I mean, it depends on the. That's why the format matters. If you have better options, sure. Then by all means do it. If you have got Giovanni Gallegos, I've gotten a bunch of leagues with middle reliever. Yeah, I might pull the trigger at some point if I think he's going to get shelled freed. He's certainly not contributing a heck of a lot of strikeouts anyway. So, against a tough team, he might not get the win anyways, and he might not even last the five. So it's all context dependent. But that's a great example. What do you do with a guy like DL Hall? A lot of promise. Probably going to be on an innings cap anyways. Not going that long. I'm probably, obviously, keeper dynasty league, you're keeping him, but 10, 12 team leagues, I'm probably dropping him right now. 15 team leagues, maybe I'm holding and benching, but honestly, I probably am dropping DL Hall anywhere anyway because he's not going to be a 170 inning pitcher anyway, so maybe I'll just stream with the spot. What are you doing with DL Hall, Sarah?
So I have DL Hall in a handful of spots. Mostly I'm just crying over the $40 of fab that I spent to pick up DL Hall. But I will say, and here's another interesting one that I'd like to throw back on y'all. In 12 team leagues, I'm probably dropping for something on the waiver wire. I kind of wish that I had dropped DL Hall for Javier Assad, because I know who Javier Assad is. I know what he's capable of doing. That is a guy who has put up a ERA right around 2.5, 2.6 over multiple seasons now. And nobody believes in how he does it, and nobody believes in the pitch mix, and there have been moments where he's gotten hit real hard, but one of those guys has a track record of basically a full season of work with a 2.5 ERA, and the other guy has promise that has never been delivered on.
What do you do with Jesus Luzardo? Is he injured? I mean, he just looks bad.
What is going on with all of the Marlins?
Yeah.
Jesus Luzardo is another guy that I was sort of out on, but I don't know. I think I'd want him on my bench. But again, now we're at the real problem, which is these are all guys I want on my bench, and there's no way I have enough bench spots for that.
Right.
I have to start some of these guys, right?
Or drop.
Yeah, you have to drop these guys and pick up other people or start some of those guys. If you were lucky enough to guess correctly and pick up Jared Jones, then you can do the thing where you start Jared Jones and put Max Fried on your bench for a little bit while he figures it out. Although Max Fried, again, I'm real nervous. That 7.71 ERA looks a little unlucky, but the FIP is still over 5, so it's it's unlucky, but it should be 5.4 or whatever. That's
The K-minus BB is atrocious. So
Here's a better question. If you see DL Hall or you see Jesus Luzardo on your waiver wire, are you picking up either one of them? You're probably picking up Luzardo, but I don't think you're going to go pick up DL Hall. And if that's the case,
then
DL Hall is dropped.
That's a very good point there. That's a very good point. Yeah.
That's a great. Can I make this complicated even one more time? Because the Marlins just sent Max Meyer back to AAA, who looked excellent, had wonderful underlying numbers. And frankly, I'm holding him everywhere I've got him because they have to pull him back up.
Yes.
AJ Puck has looked atrocious. Jesus Luzardo has looked bad. Ryan Weathers has not looked very good. The Marlins are going to pull Max Meyer up at some point in time again, and he's going to be good again, I think. But you're not going to drop Max Meyer for Jesus Luzardo, even though he's a stash and Jesus Luzardo would pitch.
Do you think we should put a third grader in charge of the Marlins in terms of personnel?
I think they have one already.
I mean, sorry to rat on the Marlins there, but I mean, really? He's going to have an innings cap anyways. Why are you throwing him in AAA? What are you doing? Do you want to limit him? So have him throw three innings.
The Brewers have a reason to throw DL Hall. They want him to get reps. They want him to get at majors. He did well in the minors. They want to see how he's doing. And the Brewers really, they're punting this season, basically. They want to see what they have with him. So I understand why they're doing that. Same thing with the Marlins. I think with Luzardo, they're going to just keep pushing him, and if he doesn't do that well, maybe they'll be able to trade him in middle season, and he'll get new life in a new team, I guess. But, I mean, some major league teams, I have no idea what they're doing.
So what about a guy like Luis Castillo? I think that's a hold and play period right now, right?
I would hold and play Castillo. I mean, yeah. It might be matchup dependent if I had a great option on my bench, but Luis Castillo's an ace. He's going to find it.
What about a guy like Blake Snell? I think Blake Snell, obviously, is a hold. He's ramping up now. I guess that it's maybe you can sit him for one more start until he's really there. Obviously, you're holding him. That's just a ramp-up situation for Snell. Right.
Agreed, and I actually think that I would want Blake Snell on my bench, and I probably would hope I had somebody else who I could start there, or maybe a guy I was speculating for saves on that I could start there, but that's just, I really think the Giants just threw him in the deep end too early after he didn't have a spring training.
Right.
Another guy, though, who's maybe a little bit more of a question mark, who was supposed to pitch today and will make his MLB debut tomorrow instead, is Jameson Taillon. I don't really know what to expect from Jameson Taillon. He was really good in the second half last season. He was really bad in the first half last season. No, we didn't see anything from him out of spring training. The minor league rehab starts were mixed. Is a guy like Jameson Taillon someone you're comfortable throwing? Or are you going to watch for a couple of starts?
Watch. And same thing with even Jordan Montgomery, who's making his debut also, I think, tomorrow. I think he's, if they're their first starts and you're nervous about it and they haven't really, you haven't seen him in spring training or anything like that, you know, Jordan Montgomery is probably the borderline case. I had Sonny Gray in a league, and I had no idea, and he was injured, and he came back, and I decided to play him right away. But there's some pitchers that he just don't want to play right away. Jordan Montgomery, he can hypothetically blow up. You don't know how ramped up he is. You don't know how many innings he's going to go. They haven't announced or anything like that. So, you know, pitchers coming back like that, like you mentioned, Blake Snell, you know, he normally goes five, six innings, and then we may try to push him more. But the fact that he didn't have a normal spring training, I think that affects them also.
Yeah, and there's less of a chance he'll have a win because he's probably not going the five innings. So definitely a watch. Do one more. What do you do with a guy like Carlos Rodon, who's looked like okay, mediocre? Is that somebody who thinks just going to get better, or maybe even it's a trade opportunity, just trade him away for someone who thinks he's, you know, to some Yankee fan or somebody who thinks he's better?
Some Yankee fan. I love that. I was going to say, I think that Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery are both potentially guys you could trade for. If you have a hitter with a hot start and you're like, oh, I believe in him long term, but it's not going to work right now, I think you get a great deal on one of those guys right now. But Carlos Rodon is tricky. He's been on my do not draft list for a couple of years just because of the injury concerns. He looks so pretty solid right now. He's looked good against teams that we think should be good. I mean, the Astros, like I mentioned, have had a slow start. The Marlins are, I think the Marlins are maybe one of the three worst teams in baseball right now. But Toronto and Arizona can both play, and he looked good against both of them. I don't know that I'm trading for Carlos Rodon.
I'd say trading away.
Yeah. Because, I worry about the injury thing, right? It's the same reason I wouldn't want to draft him. But if I had him, I would absolutely try to flip him for a bat that I believed in.
Right.
Or a pitcher that I believed in.
All right, well, continuing with our cold episode, talk a little bit about cold hitter starts. It's a little bit different, but I think the same principle in terms of when do you bench or drop somebody, that you know, you're not sitting, benching, dropping any of your elite hitters. The ones in the middle, you know, at a certain point you will, you know, sit if you have somebody else who's hot, and the guys at the bottom, you churn. Does anybody have any nuance other than this pretty similar principle?
I have two guys. I'm going to start with one of them, and then I'll go to the other guy. Nick Castellanos is having an atrocious start to his season, but the underlying numbers actually look pretty good. He's striking out less than normal. He's walking more than normal. The hard hit rate is down, but not historically so. It's like a 40% versus 40.8% for his career, 43.2% last year. He's still hitting fastballs. He's struggling on breaking and off-speed stuff. He hits in a great lineup and in a great park. What are y'all doing with Nick Castellanos?
Oh, I'm sticking with him. This is definitely a top player. We spent money on him. I'm playing him right now because I don't think there's going to be a better option that we have on the bench currently.
And he's also a guy who can also hit 2-3 home runs in a game and turn it on, so you don't want to miss that breakout. But a guy, I'll throw out a guy right now, Riley Green. He's supposed to be your quote-unquote average guy in the middle. You know, he's playing every day for the Tigers, and he's a guy I think you probably would want to bench right now. He's not going to guy you're going to drop. He's not on the level of, let's say, a guy like Jorge Polanco, who I'd probably think of dropping at this point. But what would you guys do with those two guys?
Well, Jorge Polanco, I had concerns about because of the park change. And we've seen so many guys who were borderline hitters go to Seattle and lose it. So Jorge Polanco, I am concerned about for structural reasons, which is a little bit different than Riley Green. He's basically playing in the same environment that he has always played in. With Riley Green, his BABIP is down about 100 points off last year, and it's down about 80 points off his career norms. This really looks like a case of bad luck to me. So Riley Green, I'm probably going to ride it out a little bit. If I have a better option on my bench or a guy who's off to a really hot start, I might try to do some substitution until he gets hot. But I am less concerned about Riley Green right now than I am about Jorge Polanco, and I do have Jorge Polanco in a couple leagues where I really care about him.
Yeah, I feel the same. I'm totally off Polanco, mostly because of the age, the injury tendencies, and the ballpark. Riley Green, though, Riley Green's doing just fine. He's got three homers so far, which actually puts him ahead of what he was projected to do. He's on like an 18-homer pace or so. I mean, we didn't even project that. And yeah, his BABIP is down by about 100 points from where it was last year. He's usually a very high BABIP guy, so I'm playing him. I'm not just, you know, keeping him. I'm playing him fully. I have total confidence in Riley Green. I think that, you know, for a lot of the elite players, you can't sit this early in a season. I mean, you know, if somebody you could have somebody correct themselves and have a good 3-day span where they hit, you know, two homers, you know, they go 10 for 15, and all of a sudden their numbers look like okay-ish, you know, overall. I think it's too early in the season to really futz around with anybody who's like a $15 player or higher. I just think it's too early. Want to give a couple of other names, guys, to go through and see what we would do. How about a guy like Jose Abreu?
He's on my list.
Drop.
Yeah.
Drop,
I mean,
drop.
He's out. I'm so over Jose. I'm sorry. I think Jose Abreu is done. He's 37 years old. Everything on the StatCast page is blue and not good shades of blue. It's a 29.8% K rate, which is far and away the worst K rate of Jose Abreu's career. He has zero barrels on the year, and the hard hit rate is currently 25.7%. What I'm doing with Jose Abreu is picking up Joey Loperfido.
Yeah. I mean, unless you're in an L-only league, there's no reason to pick him up. Remember, it also depends on the position. Corner infield usually has a lot of names that, you know, are somewhat near replacement level as opposed to some other positions. So, yeah, there's no problem in trying it. Nobody's running to pick up. Oh, my God, somebody dropped Jose Abreu. Let's pick him up off the waiver wire. Like, you don't see that happening at all.
Oh, but one thing I want to say, because the name I mentioned was Joey Loperfido, and people are going to go look him up, and they're going to be like, he's an outfielder. Why would you pick him up for Jose Abreu? Go look at his minor league stats last year. The Astros were absolutely trying him out at first base. I know, because I have him in the first pitch Arizona rookie league draft as my first baseman. He had enough plate appearances to qualify there. I think they were priming him for this moment, and his minor league stats look incredible. He has the hardest hit ball of his minor league career. By far this season, he's been absolutely raking, and I think it's a matter of time before the Astros cut, like, just decide that it's time for Jose Abreu to be in a bench role and give him a shot.
And certainly if the Astros cut him, you should also on your fantasy team, yes.
Oh, cut. Bench. Bench is probably a better term than cut.
Andrew Vaughn. You know, I was at Tout Wars this year, and I don't know, it was down to, like, Andrew Vaughn or Josh Bell. And I turned to Justin Mason. I'm like, hey, Justin, who do you got? Andrew Vaughn or Josh Bell? What do you think? He's like, oh no, Andrew Vaughn's hurt. He's like, no, don't take him. Go with Josh Bell. You like Josh Bell anyway. So go with him. Andrew Vaughn has been terrible so far. Is he hurt? Maybe. If I believe Justin and looking at how he's performed, I think he's a cut in 12-team leagues, or maybe in a 15-team league, I'd bench him. But what are you guys doing with Vaughn?
Well, I think almost anyone in that White Sox lineup is almost droppable at this point, except for maybe you want to hold on to Luis Robert and Eloy if you want to hold on to those two. But I don't think anyone is going to be, you know, worthwhile. But, you know, we're going to talk about the waiver wire pickups. There's a guy who's going to be coming up who you may want to replace him with, a guy like Tommy Pham, who the second he comes up, he is going to be in that lineup, probably batting middle of the lineup, because if you look at those batting averages for the White Sox players, they're god-awful. If you want a starting pitcher, pick a starting pitcher who's playing the White Sox, because that team is just so Ed, I think Andrew Vaughn, you, who's running to pick up a guy who's batting 176? Who's doing that right now? Especially a guy who's on that team that's going nowhere. They don't have, doesn't seem like they have any motivation. I can't stomach right now any hitter on the White Sox.
The White Sox are not a place I'm going to look for guys. And look, Andrew Vaughn is only 26 years old, so I think this could be an injury issue, but even if it is, you should probably replace him. What I see when I look at Andrew Vaughn's Statcast page is that last season he hit 320 against fastballs, and this season he's hitting 192 against them. Last season he whiffed on 13.5% of the fastballs he saw, and this season it's 23.9%. If you can't catch up to a fastball, something's going on in an underlying circumstance, and I don't want to figure that out for a guy who's playing on, again, one of the three worst teams in baseball, in my opinion. There's nothing that justifies hanging on to Andrew Vaughn right now to me.
How about a Francisco Lindor? Yikes, batting 151. Now, he was a 30-30 player last year. That was obviously towards the top of his outcomes. ATC had never been high on Francisco Lindor. Obviously, I was overjoyed as a Met that he did well last year, but he's not a second-round player. I don't think he's this bad. I do think he's worth keeping playing, because if you look, you know, he's walking well, his strikeout rate are actually gone way down. He's done this before in April where he's, you know, had a bad launch angle and hit too many ground balls. So I think just stay the course with Lindor, and you know, you're gonna get some bumps and just ride him. Ruvain, any difference?
Yes, agree. Also, he does have some speed, so when he gets on base, he can steal bases, so he's a guy you can sit. You know, you just deal with it. He's done this before. I think a couple of years ago, he batted 200 for most of April and half of May, and then all of a sudden he turned it on, and he ended up batting 250 or 240 for the season after batting like 200 for the first half, for the first 2 months. So he's a guy you just have to stick with. If you spent a lot of money on him, you're living and dying with him. I mean, it was your choice to take him. You have to live with it at this point, because he's not a guy that, if you see Francisco Lindor on the waiver wire, that's 100% a pickup. There's no question. And you know what? You probably don't want to trade him either, because you're trading him at the low part of his value. You're not going to get that much in return at this point, unless you find a, like you said, a desperate Yankee fan, if you find a desperate Met fan.
Agree. Well, a couple of catchers, Mitch Garver and Henry Davis. I think Henry Davis was way overdrafted this year. Like, the people were just saying, wow, he's going to get catcher eligibility? Let's just add $10 to him. No, it doesn't exactly work like that. And Mitch Garver has been pretty bad. If I'm in a one-catcher league, I'm dropping both of them right now. If I'm in a mono league, I'm keeping both of them, because that's what you have for choices. If I'm in a two-catcher, 15-team league, I'm probably keeping them and playing them. You're obviously not having a catcher on the bench, but I'm probably looking at the waiver wire right now and saying, is there anybody who I missed? It's at that point where I'm really considering dropping Garver Davis and scouting the options.
So for Garver in particular, I had him in a one-catcher league, and he missed a couple of games for hashtag reasons, and I was just like, no. The whole reason I have Mitch Garver on this team is because he's supposed to be the designated hitter and he's not supposed to have deal with these injuries and whatnot. So it was a real easy decision to replace him with Logan Ohapi, who was sitting on the waiver wire. It's a much harder decision in a two catcher league, but I do have a name if people are looking to do that. I think that Ivan Herrera with the Cardinals is an absolute stud of a bat. I love the underlying numbers. I love what he has done with the playing time opportunity. And so do the Cardinals, apparently, because they are playing two catchers consistently, at least against left-handed pitchers, right? Like, they've got Wilson Contreras and Ivan Herrera in the lineup a solid 30% of the time. I think it's a matter of time before they realize that they have to do that more frequently. And they don't have a ton of great designated hitter options going on there, despite the fact that they have a really crowded outfield situation. So if I had Mitch Garver on a team, I would very strongly consider dropping him for Ivan Herrera.
Yeah, Ivan Herrera has been absolutely fantastic, and he looks legit. So there you go. All right, let's just talk about a couple more outfielders. I'll give you three of them. Andrew Benintendi, who I think I'm just cutting. Whit Merrifield, I think the party's over, I'm cutting. And Victor Scott, I think I'm cutting. I think, at least for this year, he's like a bad Billy Hamilton, where he can't get on base. Is anybody keeping any of these guys? Forget about mono leagues, just in the 15-team leagues or shallower?
I'm not hanging on to any of those guys, although I do have Whit Merrifield and a couple. I had Whit Merrifield and Andrew Benintendi on a team for a week because of injuries early on, which was the saddest point of my fantasy baseball season so far. That was not by design, people. That was by injuries and like Noel V. Marte getting suspended at the start of the year and me just trying to find guys who would play the first week. So no judgment. I don't think any of those guys is doing much for my fantasy teams at the moment. Benintendi plays in one of the worst rosters possible. I actually really like Victor Scott as a steals guy long-term. If you have him in a keeper league, obviously hold him, but he has to get on base to steal bases, and he is just not doing that.
Yeah, and I already dropped Andrew Benintendi in one of my leagues. I got him to get, you know, to accumulate runs and maybe a decent batting average. If he's not giving you that, he's not worth anything.
Yep, exactly. All right, let's talk a little bit about waiver wire. Go around the room, and who's somebody that you'd like to pick up this week? Start with you, Sarah.
Well, I already named Yvonne Herrera, who I think if you need a catcher, if you've got one of these catchers that you're a little bit like, I don't know, I really think the Cardinals are going to play him. I think that they don't love Wilson Contreras' skills behind the plate, although his skills have improved considerably, and I think that he's going to play, and you can get in on the ground floor of a guy who's got a really good hit tool and plays a position where that hit tool is even more valuable because of the few number of people who have a similar hit tool. So that is one guy that I have been snatching up and even just dropping some guys. I have a handful of leagues where I waited on catcher too long and I had been starting like a Yan Gomes, and happy to start Yvonne Herrera over Yan Gomes.
Oh, excellent. Ruben?
Well, I mentioned Tommy Pham. He's only owned in 4% of CBS leagues. As soon as he's brought up, he's probably going to be the cleanup hitter there in Chicago. So he's going to get a lot of at-bats, and he can do well, and he probably will get traded during the course of the season just like he was last year. So he's a guy you can, if you want to get on the ground floor, you know, you can probably get him for almost nothing at this point. Two guys who were added a lot this past week, Ryan O'Hearn, who's now in the 28% of the leagues in CBS. He's eligible at first and in the outfield in 15 games so far, 319, 4 homers, 6 RBIs, 11 runs, and he's playing almost every day for that team. Even with all the young guys, he's still getting his at-bats because he's hot. He's a guy you have to ride. Another guy who's hot right now is Lamonte Wade, who's normally in a platoon. He's played 19 games so far. He's batting 378. He only has one homer and one stolen bases, but he's eligible in outfield and first base. And if you need to replace let's say a Jose Abreu, Lamonte Wade is not a bad thing to, you know, try to help fix your batting average at this point and just play him and ride him. And I want to mention one middle reliever, and it's Reed Garrett of the Mets. He's only owned in 1% of CBS leagues, so he's eligible. You can probably get him everywhere. He's been a multi-inning guy so far. He's pitched 8 2/3 innings, no runs, a whip of .81, and he has 17 strikeouts in that 8 2/3 innings. 17 strikeouts. He's not going to get you saves. That's Edwin Diaz's job on the Mets, but he's got 2 wins already. So if you get a middle reliever who's pitching multiple innings, getting a lot of strikeouts, and able to vulture wins, and he's only owned in 1% of leagues, I'm grabbing that.
Yep, love that.
I have one more name that people should keep an eye out for, and this might work in deep 15 leagues too, depending on how people stashed. I think Paul Skeens is coming, and I think the Pirates are off to a hot start. They could use his arm in the rotation. They're just wasting his arm at the moment in the minors. MLB is like promoting when Paul Skeens starts in minor league games and showing his starts on their network. It's absolutely filthy. And if you can get in on that before it's going to cost you $250 in FAB, you should.
Yeah, no, absolutely. In some leagues, though, I know in NFBC, you can't pick him up mid-season. He actually has to first start. And then when he comes up, he's going to be $300-$400 in FAB. So
unless he was drafted and dropped.
Unless he was drafted and
dropped. And he was drafted and dropped in a lot of leagues.
Right. Yeah. So definitely take a look on the waiver wire to see if he's there. And by all means, do that. Otherwise, you're going to see, I'm not going to say a record, but you're going to see quite a big show of FAB in one shot for him. I'll give you a couple of guys. You guys took some of my 15-team leaguers, so a little bit more shallow here. Jesse Winker is still available in a bunch. He's trying to reclaim what he had in 2021. Looks great so far. And he's going to have a long leash in that lineup in Washington to try it. So give a shot at Jesse Winker. And Nelson Velasquez, he's going to strike out a lot. So he's better in roto leagues than points leagues, but he's got 30 home run ability. He's got two home runs so far. He's not even barreling the ball yet. I really like Nelson Velasquez and always did. So him and Brewers, I think it's Joel Piampas. We saw him, Ruben and I saw him live. We thought he had great stuff. His velocity is down a little bit from last year. So he's not ramped up fully yet, but I think he's filthy, and I think he is going to be the guy until Devin Williams comes back. So if you do need saves, I like Piampas better than Uribe, I think. My shares have been Piampas so far when I've taken guesses. Let's do a little pitcher preview. Anybody want to throw in a pitcher that you might want to pick up for this week?
Yeah, I'll go with a pitcher for the San Francisco Giants. He's pitching. He's actually two start, and he's actually at home for both of them. It's Keaton Wynn. He's got a start at home against the Mets, and then a home against the Pirates. The Mets are not really hitting that well right now, especially their big boppers. We mentioned Francisco Lindor is not really hitting that well right now, and then a lot of the lineup is not hitting that great. Their Mets pitching happens to be carrying them for the most part at this point. He's against the Mets at home and against the Pirates at home. It's still the Pirates. Yes, the Pirates started out hot, but it's still the Pirates. So it's two starts, and he's done well so far. He's pitched to a 3.7 ERA right now in 17 innings with 11 strikeouts. He's got a 1-2 record. You know, you may or may not get the win from him. He's pitched 17 innings so far in three starts, so there's a good chance he'll get you enough innings for that. But I think he's the only real two-star pitcher possibility out there that really tempts me to even think about.
He's got a very good whip each of the last 2 years. Now, I think he's a streaming option, even for 15-team leagues. So I'm playing him this week in 15-team leagues. Then he's going to face Philly at Philly. That would not be a start. So he could be just a short-term streaming option, but sure. Anyone else to throw in, Sarah, for pitcher pickups?
Yeah, so the Braves are going to start Darius Vines, it looks like, this Sunday against the Rangers. Darius Vines was actually quite good when he pitched last year. It's a weird pitch mix that doesn't pop on like the stuff metrics because it's a real plus-plus changeup that is combined with some other things. But he held his own last season when he got the opportunity to start. He's going to have to start against Texas on Sunday. There's a non-zero chance that goes poorly. But that may just keep some of those bid prices down.
Yeah.
And frankly, Darius Vines is in my opinion, going to have a legitimate shot at the Atlanta Braves rotation because their other options just are really young and inexperienced or not quite as good as Darius Vines. Like, I'd rather see Darius Vines than Alan Winans. Both A.J. Smith-Shaver and Hurston Waldrop are so young. They basically went from high A all the way to triple A, and in Shaver's case, the majors last year. I think Vines has a legit shot here. They're not getting Spencer Strider back. We already talked about the struggles Max Fried has had. So Darius Vines strikes me as a value on the waiver wire, and I'm interested in him long-term.
What I really liked what you said was that you almost hope that he has a bad outing so that the price is kept down, right? And you giggled a little bit, but that's actually legit. That's a big thing. And getting a guy at a cheaper fab price and saving those bucks, that goes a long way because, you know, if you believe in the guy, you want him as cheap as you can, as opposed to, oh, look what he did on Sunday. Then everybody's going to want him, and you may not be able to get him. So he's not on your team this week either way, right? So you might as well get him at a cheaper price.
Exactly. But you don't want him sent down either. You don't want to be doing that poorly to get sent down either.
Yeah, you don't want to be like Max Mayer, and then they'll send you down, right?
I don't think they're going to send him down. I mean, I looking at their options, it's basically Vines and Winans is sort of like the highest level type of guys they can throw in that spot. And unless they're going to call up Waldrop or A.J. Smith-Shaver, and I don't see it quite yet, Vines has the best shot at that spot in the rotation, even if he doesn't do great against Texas.
I'm going to give you a couple names. Edward Cabrera, he's still available in a lot of leagues because he just came off the injured list. He's pitching against Washington this week and then against Colorado. He looked great in his first start. I think he's even good to pick up in 12-team leagues. Go for it for there. Ryan Weathers has looked pretty good as well, teammate. He's got versus Washington, and then he's at Oakland. Also some good starts that are upcoming. So I would say that he's interesting. His skills have jumped up a lot. His strikeouts are way up this year, and it looks pretty much justified. I haven't really watched his games to get my eye test to check, but call strikes and his swing strikes are both up, and so his CSW is up a total of 5%. He's throwing more sliders and sinkers, so you know the pitch mix change has really gone well, and his fastball velocity is up one tick. He's thrown 96, so Ryan Weathers looks good. I would pick him up if he hasn't. And just a couple names were somewhat interesting to me. Yariel Rodriguez, first of all, it's the only name in baseball that contains Ariel in the middle of it, so I got to pick him up, right? he throws almost 96 miles an hour, and the Blue Jays are playing him. And he's not going to get length just yet, but I love the stuff so far. He's at Kansas City, then he's two-start Kansas City, and then at Washington. So I kind of like him as an upside option for the year. I was even considering before the season started. So take a look at Yariel Rodriguez. And Paul Blackburn, I know, pitchers for Oakland, but he seems to hang around, and every so often he turns in some good starts, especially at home. This week he's at the Yankees and at Baltimore. I don't really love that. You could get walloped. Maybe you get a win. I don't know. Then he's versus Miami at home. I kind of like that start. I'd almost pick him up now if you have the room and just pick him there. Because, you know, guys like this who know how to – they're professional pitchers. Blackburn just turns into – every year I'm sitting here and it's, you know, beginning of April, mid-April, and I'm like, well, who to pick up? Oh, Paul Blackburn's doing so far this year. And every year the same thing happens. So he's interesting, Paul Blackburn. Even though he pitches for a crappy team, he somehow does well to start the season. So consider him. All right, injury update, Ruvane. I'm sure we got a lot of stuff to talk about. Go for it.
All right, so we'll start with some hitters. We'll start with Christian Yelich, who's on the aisle again because of a back strain. We don't know how bad it is, but this is a chronic issue. This is the fourth time he's been on the aisle in his career due to back issues. The most recent time was back in 2021. Blake Perkins was called up, and Owen Miller may get some playing time as well. Tyler O'Neill was placed on the concussion aisle this week after a collision with Rafael Devers. O'Neill already said he's feeling better, so they're hoping he won't stay out too long, but Willier Abreu should see more playing time with O'Neill out. Ozzy Albies has a fractured right big toe. He won't require surgery. He's in a boot, but there's no timetable for his return. It should take about 3 to 4 weeks for him to fully recover, so he shouldn't be out for too long. David Fletcher was called up, David Fletcher who plays almost every position, and Luis Guillorme may get some playing time, which he already has. Garrett Whitlock on the IL with a left oblique strain. They don't know how bad it is, or we don't know how bad it is. They're saying it's a low-grade strain and that the Red Sox are quote-unquote just being safe. Chase Anderson is an option if he's going to possibly take his roster spot. Tyler Wells, I mentioned him earlier. He has right elbow inflammation. I have him on a roster in one of my leagues. I am planning on dropping him this year. I'm going to drop him. I have other options, so I'm going to do that. But John has already had 4 or 5 rehab starts. He's not done well in those rehab starts, but he ended it to replace him. And Albert Suarez, who I mentioned earlier, who filled in for Wells very well the last start, so that's something to look at. Sarah, I'm sorry to say this, but Seiya Suzuki on the IL with a moderate right oblique strain. The Cubs say around 4 weeks he's going to be out, but if it's a moderate strain, you're looking at more 4 to 6 weeks, so that's something to watch for. Garrett Cooper's getting a little bit more playing time there when he's out. Yu Darvish on the IL with neck tightness. They said he may have injured it during a side session. You know, Darvish, who's also 37, 38, is getting up there in age, so, you know, these little things may happen. Chris Bryant is back on the IL, where he usually is this time of year. he's also got a low back issue. Brenton Doyle will get more playing time because of that. And freak injury of the week, Joey Bart was warming up with his pitchers in the bullpen during batting practice. A fly ball, a home run was hit. It hit him in the head, and now he's having concussion symptoms.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
I am serious. He may be placed in the aisle for that. They're seeing whether or not he's going to – I mean, Joey Bart, just moving from San Francisco, he's just warming up a pitcher, and he gets hit during batting practice by a home run ball in the head. What are the chances of that happening?
And Byron Buxton, not injured yet. He does have no homers.
I haven't – I'm waiting for. I'm saving him for like a week or two from now, so don't worry.
He does have no homers, batting 193, but those Red Sox are really getting pummeled. I mean, you mentioned Devers. I think Devers might go on the IL. And
yes, he went for an MRI, so we're waiting for the results for that. So we'll see how that works out.
And Trevor Story is out. Well, we're not surprised on that one. Yeah, the Red Sox really being hammered very, very, very quickly.
Listen, y'all, I need Tyler O'Neill to come back from whatever this is 100% because the start to his season has been unbelievably good and is just more proof that the Cardinals have no idea how to value their outfield talent because they keep letting all the wrong guys walk away. Tyler O'Neill is already 50% of the way to his 2022 home run total with 7. He's already 2 home runs away from his 2023 home run total, which was 9. I need him to come back 100% because this has been an incredible thing to watch. The K rate is down, the walk rate is up, and all he's doing is mashing the baseball.
Yeah, that kind of analysis is like Mike Trout has now had his last 3 years of stolen base totals. He's just eclipsed that in the first couple of games here. But
Mike Trout also has 8 home runs at this point. I think he's leading the majors in home runs. So
Trout looks like Trout.
Trout's 3 not
stolen bases.
A fluke. He has 3 stolen bases. He actually stole second and third in the same inning, which was actually, he said he hadn't done that in about 7-8 years. It was a crazy stat like that.
One of the best fantasy players and his teammate, Taylor Ward. What a great start to the year. By the way, Taylor Ward was ATC's number 1 most undervalued outfielder. Well, I guess we were right. And we were right about Freeland. Go figure.
And what do you do? I mentioned actually this earlier, but the number 1 guy from ATC last year for value was Yandy Diaz. Yandy Diaz, how can you even play him at this point? His batting, you usually get him for batting average. He's doing nothing right now. So he's going to, what do you do with him?
I think, well, his BABIP is 238. He usually has like a 240 BABIP. So I think you stay the course. He's got 10 RBIs, though, and he's got 1 homer. He's not a big homer. You stay the course with Yandy Diaz. That's just bad luck. His strikeout rate is still like 15%. So Yandy, you just keep staying with.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, we've done a lot of cold players. Hopefully you've gotten a lot of good information from us and some good stories over the past couple of weeks. So, Sarah, thank you so much for joining us on the show today during a Cubs rainout. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. Always a blast to talk baseball with y'all. And yeah, we had so many cold players. We didn't even get to the list of the hot players. We'll have to do that another day.
Yeah, we'll do it at a different time. Just we pounded the cold today. why don't you tell us what's going on with you and where we can find everything Sarah Sanchez?
Absolutely. You can find me on Twitter or X or whatever they call that website these days, at @BCB_Sarah. There is no H on the Sarah. All of my baseball takes and links to my writing are there. I do my Cubs analysis at bleedcubbyblue.com. I do my fantasy analysis in the written form at Baseball HQ and in the podcasting form at Fantasy Feud on the Pitcherless Network. And definitely check that out if you're so inclined. We have had some incredible debates so far this season. Ariel joined us for an earlier episode. I think I'm going to get Ruvane in for one here in the near future. And it's just a fun show where we're talking about all of the latest and greatest fantasy news through the lens of debate.
Awesome. And Ruvane, what about you?
You can follow me on Twitter at MLB Injury Guru, where I tweet out the injury updates as they come, all of them, even the freaky ones. And you can also follow me at RotoBowler, where I have a weekly article that comes out every week discussing the injuries I discussed, as well as many others, next man up, and everything you need to know to help with your fab for that week.
I mean, is Major League Baseball going to now have covers on the bullpens to prevent flyball home runs from hitting the catcher warming guy? That's just so crazy, you know?
Yeah, it is.
Where they don't alert somebody to, oh, hold on a second, pause for a second, homer, incoming homer, you know.
Well, if you're catching a ball and they heads up and the catcher's sitting there, what are you supposed to do? Look up or get hit, you know, kind of.
Freaky things happen. Hey, we even had an earthquake in the north. Did you feel that, Ruvane, the earthquake?
I felt the earthquake. I felt the aftershock as well. I was at work and we actually had to empty the building because it was a medical facility. We emptied out just to make sure that no aftershocks and the building was intact. So yeah, it seems like though the eclipse and the earthquake all happened around the times the Mets got their first win of the season. So I don't know, maybe it's related.
There you go. The Mets look hot right now. Nobody's beating us. It's our year, folks. I think the ATC's percentage for the Mets has gone up from like 20% to 30% or something like that, as they've actually done better than what we predicted originally. So there you go. Despite them starting the year like 0-4, 0-5. So there you go. All right. Again, I'm Ariel Cohen. You can see my work over at Fangraphs, over at RotoBowler. I'm at ATCNY on the Twitter X machine, whatever you want to call it. And, of course, you can listen to us right here on the Beat the Shift podcast. We will not be having a show next week. Going to do some Passover celebration, but we will be back regularly in 2 weeks from now. And we'll see you then. So thanks so much for listening to the show. Thanks again to Sarah Sanchez for coming on. And from all of us here at Beat the Shift, we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Beat the Shift podcast presented by Fangraphs. Follow us on Twitter at beat_shift_pod.